11:05 in Seattle. Thank you for listening. Dave is off on an early Memorial Day weekend vacation. I am Paul Harris, proud to be behind the microphone, and thank you for listening. Let me introduce you to Jacob Sullum. Jacob is a senior writer at Reason Magazine. A few years ago, he wrote a book called Saying Yes in Defense of Drug Use. One of the topics that he's been writing about a lot lately is whether drug laws in this country may change now that the Obama administration is in place. After all, this is a president who admits some drug use in his early days. Jacob, welcome to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Thank you.
You have a piece up on the Reason website this morning about a guy by the name of Eddie Lepp. Share that story with my audience, if you would.
Well, this is actually one of several cases where people who were growing marijuana for patients in California, which it's legal for patients to use marijuana if they have a doctor's recommendation, and it's legal for either them or their caregivers, whom they can designate, to grow it for them. So he was growing marijuana for patients, but under federal law, that doesn't matter. And in fact, in his trial, as is typically the case, he was not even allowed to mention that this was for medical use and that it was legal under state law. So he was convicted of cultivating more than 1,000 plants, which triggered a mandatory minimum 10-year sentence.
10 years?
Ten years
in prison for growing marijuana.
And that's a real 10 years. That's not, you know, there's no parole. And that's the judge who issued the sentence said she had no choice under the law. She called it extreme. And when the Lepp's attorney said it's really incredible, her response was, incredible is what the law requires.
Now, why is that if California allows medical marijuana?
Because the federal government doesn't care that California allows it, or at least, you know, historically, under both the Bush and the Clinton administrations, they not only didn't recognize the legitimacy of medical marijuana, but they were intent on undermining the state law that allows medical use of marijuana, and would go after people who were either growing or distributing the plant, even if it was for medical use, because they, under federal law, that doesn't matter. And in fact, this went all the way to the Supreme Court several years ago, and the court said that the federal government could continue to arrest people and prosecute them for growing or possessing marijuana for medical use, even though it's legal under state law, because federal law takes precedence, and it was justified to intervene in this. Even though, you know, this is not something that involves any kind of interstate trafficking, and this is marijuana that never leaves the state. It could even be something that a cancer patient grows on their own windowsill. It would still be subject to federal law under this reasoning. They claimed that banning medical marijuana in states that allow it, the federal government coming in and confiscating it and arresting people, that was justified as an exercise of Congress's power to regulate interstate commerce. And the reasoning was something like this: if you grow your own pot for medical use, then you're not buying it on the interstate market, and therefore you affect interstate commerce.
Interstate commerce that would be illegal.
And that actually has, that sort of reasoning has a fairly long history. It goes back to the New Deal when they said that you could stop a farmer under a system of quotas for crops. You could stop him from growing certain crops or certain amounts of crops on his own property, even if it was for his own consumption, because the fact that he was growing it meant that he wasn't buying it, and that affected interstate commerce. So it was that the same sort of idea. It's a very broad notion of what that power entails, which really could encompass just about anything. And, of course, historically, I think conservatives have objected to that line of reasoning much more than liberals have. But in this case, you had a lot of liberals who were up in arms about this and said that the federal government has no business interfering with state decisions regarding medical marijuana. The state should be allowed to set their own policies. And, you know, that's what certainly what the Constitution requires.
Now, we've got 13 states that have laws permitting medical use of marijuana, but you do have the federal government with this huge obstacle and this crackdown on users and sellers and, you know, people just trying to make themselves a little bit healthier in many cases. Will that continue under the Obama administration?
Well, it's the signs are very fuzzy at this point. During the campaign, Obama repeatedly promised that he was going to call off the DEA raids on medical marijuana dispensaries in places like California, where they operate legally. But they haven't actually done that. They, he's promised it repeatedly. After he took office, his official said, yes, he's going to follow through on that. He will. Eric Holder, the attorney general, made an announcement, which is probably the most explicit indication of a change in policy, where he said that they were only going to go after people. They were going to only target people who were violating both state and federal law. The implication being that if you were supplying medical marijuana to patients and that the state was okay with that, the federal government was not going to intervene.
Okay.
A week later, the DEA had another raid on a dispensary in San Francisco that was, as far as we can tell, legal under state law. They were licensed by the city of San Francisco, operating openly. And the claim, apparently, was that there was something funny about their state income tax, or rather state sales tax paperwork or filings, or they didn't pay all the money they owed, or some kind of impropriety, which is absurd on a couple of counts. First of all, why is the federal government enforcing California's state sales tax? Secondly, what the implication is that it's not a matter of complying with the state medical marijuana law. It's a matter of complying with every single law that you could possibly conceive of, right? So if you have some kind of zoning violation, theoretically, or something that's not quite up to snuff legally under state or local law, that would give the DEA a pretext to raid you, even though the selling of the marijuana part is legal under state law. So that's not at all what people understood Holder to be saying, but if that's the case, then there really is no change in policy, because it means they can always find a pretext to raid whoever they want to. So that's what remains unseen, and it's not clear whether this is going to amount to anything, because unless they're willing to say that it's up to the state to decide whether it's legitimate and we will not, second guess them, then there's not really going to be any substantive change in policy.
It's News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Paul Harris for Dave Ross, talking with Jacob Sullum, senior writer at Reason Magazine, about whether the Obama administration will loosen the leash on marijuana laws in this country. There was an online town hall meeting a few weeks ago in which some marijuana activists kind of bombarded the lines with questions about marijuana. Obama kind of rejected any notion of legalizing it or regulating it or taxing it. You mentioned the word tax a moment ago. He says he doesn't think it's a good strategy to grow our economy. But at a time when our economy is in such bad shape, give me an idea how much, if we did legalize and regulate and tax marijuana in this country, how much it would mean for federal coffers.
Well, I think that line of argument is overemphasized, and it may have made it a little bit easier for him to dismiss what was actually a perfectly legitimate question. I mean, he basically laughed at this question, even though it was by far the most popular one about the marijuana legalization. I think the main economic benefit from legalizing marijuana or other illegal drugs is that you eliminate this huge deadweight loss. People pay a huge premium for illegal drugs because of the risk that the suppliers have to go to in order to provide the illegal drug, the risk associated with the black market. These drugs cost way, way more than they would. Maybe 100 times as much in the case of marijuana. So think about all the money that people spend. Now, the cash value of just the domestic marijuana crop in the U.S. is currently rated at about $36 billion a year, right? So that's money that people are spending, most of which, the vast majority of which, they don't have to be spending on that. If that money were freed up, because in a legal market, the drug would be much cheaper, it would go to all kinds of other forms of consumption, and that would stimulate economic activity in that way. In addition to that, on the legal sales, you might have sales tax, you would have income tax, obviously, on these now legitimate businesses selling marijuana, which could amount to a few billion a year, all told. But I don't think that's the main benefit. And certainly, even getting beyond these financial benefits, the main benefit is avoiding all the costs that are associated with prohibition, some of which you can't measure in financial terms, but certainly all the money that the government spends enforcing the laws, all the loss of productivity that is involved in locking people up for growing marijuana or selling marijuana, you would avoid all those costs, and then all of the associated costs of the black market, the violence and the corruption and the undermining of civil liberties and all that. You would eliminate those problems. So
yeah.
I think those are much greater benefits than the government tax revenue.
I just think about all the money that was lost by the government prosecuting Eddie Lepp to this level, to the U.S. District Court, when a guy was just trying to help people who were sick, who wanted to feel a little bit better, it's absolutely ridiculous to me. Now, where are... Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was going to say, and there are people don't realize, I mean, there are a huge number of arrests. I think in the last year that the FBI released data for, it was something like 840,000 marijuana arrests every year. Now, not all those people are going to prison, but that's a huge waste of resources, that they're actually nabbing people, in most cases, for simple possession. So if you could, you know, if you didn't have to enforce those laws, those resources could be used much more cost-effectively.
I know that many surveys are not really a legitimate snapshot of where we are on anything in America, but if you look at things over the course of years, you can see trends in perhaps changes in popular views. Where is the American public now on marijuana compared to where we were, say, 30 years ago?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure that they have comparable data going back to the mid-70s or the late 70s. But that was a time when people were talking about marijuana decriminalization. President Carter, in fact, endorsed the idea. It seemed like the country was moving that direction. A bunch of states dramatically reduced penalties such that you get just a citation instead of it being an arrestable offense. And that seemed to be the way it was going. Then, of course, in the late 70s, early 80s, that all turned around, and we had the big ramping up of the war on drugs, and attitudes became more negative again. Since then, I would say it's certainly true that since Reagan's war on drugs, attitudes have become more congenial again to the idea of decriminalizing, if not fully legalizing, marijuana. If you look at the polls, the multiple polls have found that support for decriminalization, which means you can possess it for personal use and there's no penalty involved, that's usually what is meant by that question, they find over 40% support pretty consistently. And that's significant. That seems to be unprecedented in recent history, at least. And then there was one poll recently which found actually majority support not just for decriminalization but for legalization, meaning that you'd be allowed to sell, grow it and sell it. And then it did, I think one of the things they mentioned in the question was the idea of getting tax revenue out of it. So it's not clear. I'm a little bit skeptical of that result because nobody else has found quite that level of support. But I think public opinion is definitely moving in a more favorable direction, and if the trend continues, which of course it might not, look what happened going from the 70s to the 80s, but assuming it continues, you might start to see majority support, at least for decriminalization and possibly also for legalization in the next decade or so.
Jacob, I'd like to hold you over for the next segment and include some listener calls. Do you have time to do that?
Sure.
Okay, I appreciate that. Jacob Sullum, senior writer at Reason Magazine, and the author a couple of years ago of a book called Saying Yes in Defense of Drug Use. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show. The phone number is 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-KIRO. We're back with more in just a moment on News Talk 97.3 CHIRO FM. It's the Dave Ross Show. I'm Paul Harris, talking with Jacob Sullum, senior writer at Reason Magazine, author of the book Saying Yes in Defense of Drug Use. And we're talking about whether drug laws in this country may change under the Obama administration. Let's go to Kent and Ted. You're on News Talk 97.3 CHIRO FM. Good morning. Ted, are you there?
I can't understand why pot wouldn't be legal. Me having been indulged for many a years, I don't do it anymore. I've grown out of it, but when you look at what happens to somebody smoking pot and what happens to somebody drinking alcohol, the only reason I could think that it wouldn't be legal is that the guys that are running it illegally are paying the government more money than they're getting in taxes.
Jacob, what about the notion of not allowing people to grow their own drugs at home because then Big Pharma doesn't like the fact that you're growing your own drugs at home?
Well, I mean, there's something to that in the sense that marijuana as a medicine is competing with certain prescription drugs that people are making money off of. But on the other hand, there are pharmaceutical companies that are looking into exploiting the medicinal properties of cannabis by developing it into drugs that they can patent. There already is a synthetic THC capsule on the American market, Marinol. which for various reasons patients find not as satisfactory as smoked marijuana or inhaled marijuana. But there is a company that is looking to get approval for cannabis extract that you spray in the mouth under the tongue. So clearly, you know, I mean, it's quite well established that there are medical uses for marijuana for various applications. And yes, if you can do it yourself, do it on your own much more cheaply than that is money out of the drug company's pockets. I'm not sure how big an influence they play in this, keeping marijuana illegal, but certainly they do have an interest in that area.
We talked before the break, and thanks for your call, Ted. I appreciate it. Jacob, we talked before the break about polls and how the American public views legalizing, regulating, and taxing marijuana. There was a piece in the New York Times a few days ago by a guy named Michael Weinrip who says, you know, if you're 20 years old and in college and smoke dope in your dorm, you're probably more likely to be in favor of it than if you're the 50-year-old mother or father of that 20-year-old.
Yeah, I read that article, and I found it to be to illustrate one of the main reasons I think why drug policy reform did not happen as quickly or as soon as people might have expected it to do. You had all of these baby boomers who were pot smokers, including our last three presidents, right?
Yep.
Politicians, judges, political leaders and community leaders who used to smoke pot for the most part, had no problems with it, didn't think it was a big deal. But then suddenly when they got older and they came into positions of power, it was a big deal. Now, part of that can just be that they're, worried about the political consequences. But I think there's also this phenomenon occurring where they become parents, and it's a very natural thing that when you see your kids doing the very same things you used to do, even if you look back at that and think it was no big deal, when they do it, it is a big deal, right? That's a very natural reaction that parents tend to have.
Sure.
It's not logical. It's not a logical reaction. So I think if you look at the propaganda where the government is telling you, pot isn't like it used to be, this isn't your father's marijuana, it's so much stronger now, it's like a completely different drug, that whole theme, I think, can best be understood as an attempt to validate this natural reaction from parents that they think things that they used to do are much worse when their own kids do it.
Well, it's like when you were 16 years old, you used to go to high school parties and there was always booze and beer around. When you were 16 and 17, that was cool. But when your 16 or 17 year old goes to a high school party and you find out there's booze and beer around, hey, not with my kid. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very, very, very similar thing. I mean, and it applies to all kinds of risks, not just the ones having to do with drugs or alcohol. But I thought that if you look at the Weinrip article, obviously the main theme there is emotional, but he also brings forward this argument that even though most people who smoke pot turn out okay, they may even become president, some minority of them are going to be led by the experience with marijuana to harder drugs, and some of them will become heroin addicts, and that's bad. And if we make marijuana cheaper, more readily available, make it legal, more people will be trying it, and a small fraction of them will become heroin addicts. And so, on balance, you're going to increase the number of heroin addicts.
The gateway argument.
This is the gateway argument, or the stepping stone theory, and it's never been validated. Certainly, there is a pattern where, for anybody who eventually uses, say, crack or heroin or methamphetamine, they probably did try marijuana first, but they also tried alcohol first. They probably tried tobacco first. They, certainly had milk. They're all kinds of things that they had first.
M&M's and Doritos.
Yeah. So what seems to be the case is that there certain people are inclined to like drug experiences. Certain people, for various reasons, are inclined to start using drugs at an early age. And there is a correlation between using drugs early, at a young age, and being more likely to get into problems with it. And those people, may eventually get into trouble with more serious drugs. But it's not as if the act of smoking marijuana is what causes them, to one day wake up and say, hey, I want to inject some heroin. I found that interesting that he trotted that out, because this is an old argument that was used, back in the days shortly after marijuana was banned. It's been heard over and over again. It was heard in the 60s, certainly. It was the sort of argument that Weinrip in his 20s would have laughed at this argument.
Right.
But now that he's in his 50s, he's trotting it out without any evidence to support it. So it's just sort of an impressionistic thing. I know kids who got into trouble with drugs. I've heard stories. He actually says that. He says, I heard of, parents who are good people and their kids, you know, got into trouble with drugs, and there, but for the grace of God, go I, and so forth. Of course, they got into trouble with drugs even though they're illegal. So, which, you know, should give you pause. This is happening even though, despite prohibition. Prohibition is not succeeding in preventing kids from getting into trouble with drugs, and in some way, it's compounding the problem by making the drugs, drug use more dangerous, by obstructing the flow of honest information. You know, you can't, it's tough to say, marijuana is okay, but, you know, I would recommend stay away from the crack or the injecting drugs, or, you can't even make those distinctions because, oh, they're all illegal, they're all equally bad, and so therefore either the kids don't get good information or they just don't believe anything you say because they think you're full of it when it comes to marijuana, for example.
Jacob Sullum writes often about the failed war on drugs and many other subjects as a senior writer at Reason Magazine. His book from a couple of years ago is called Saying Yes, In Defense of Drug Use. And I appreciate your time today, Jacob. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show. 1-888-973-KIRO is the phone number if you want to join me here on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.